I forgot what I was going to say.
I know what you were going to say.
Very something.
Man.
Special. Show and day.
It is. Happy yes. Pie Day. Happy Pie Day. Pie. That's probably why Dwight Silverman isn't with us this evening.
Too much pie.
Or he's about to embark on pie. All right, well, welcome to Technology...
Maybe.
Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Yee.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Bruce.
All right. Welcome to the show, everybody. We're so glad you could tune in. Finally got rid of that Dwight character. Going to do a real show now. Hey, look who it is. It's Leo Laporte.
Special guest.
Oh, I so missed it. All right. So we're glad you could tune in. And wow. So it's, yeah, just today feels odd. I don't know what it is. I guess it's because of the time change. Getting here and having the light, having it still be kind of sunny when I'm driving into the station.
Funky weather, too. It was like getting kind of dark when I was in because the clouds were rolling in, like prematurely dark, even with the time change.
Prematurely dark and when it's unnaturally light.
Yes.
Those two things don't go together well. All right. Visit us online at geekradio.com. That's the website. You can also hang out in IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, in the channel called Tech Bites. You can also use the IRC client on our webpage to participate in that if you'd like. And you can also use the website to contact us. What are you looking for? Where'd Flick to go?
I think he went to go move his car again.
Again? He's already moved it once.
I think he's parking spot hopping. Spot hopping.
Oh.
I found I think he wanted to be Pi Day themed.
Found a what?
Is that the wrong pie? Not Magnum Pie?
Magnum Pie. Did you go get a pie?
He left to go get a pie. Look, he's back.
Awesome.
House of Pie Pie.
He brought a real big pie.
Come for the gay, stay for the pie.
No one touched that gas station pie.
second pie that's in the building.
Yeah, we've had two pies show up.
Yes. The first one
was a pecan, a little mini pecan pie. Yes.
From a gas station. It'll probably last till next pie year.
Wow, that's like a...
Where's...
Whoa,
you want to splat
awesome.
Somebody. That's a face splatting pie. Well, he almost dropped it.
Can we cut that into 3.14 equal pieces?
Somebody
probably.
Take a picture of it with their phone and tweet it.
Probably.
Yeah, Dwight's going to be both happy and upset.
That he wasn't here for Pi Day.
Yeah.
All right. Yay, Pi Day. I was wondering why you were going back outside. We thought you were moving your car again.
Yeah, I thought it would be better if I brought it during the show so y'all wouldn't know about it.
And then show it to us so we would know about it.
Because now we have to eat it during the show.
Too much pie.
I that's not fair to Pete. Pete, do you have a pie?
No, actually, I had tres leches for my...
That's like three pies.
All right, so Groovehouse is documenting the big pie. You want to get the little pie and just drop it in the middle of the big pie? Yeah, I got a picture of the two pies. All right, now we're just... It's a pie party here. And we're going to talk about the pie for another 3 minutes and 14 seconds. All right, well, don't choke. Well, that's all I got. Let's do the news. What?
Yeah. We got the dump.
The delay's back.
The dump's back.
Yeah.
So we can say, and, and.
All seven of them.
In a row.
That was awesome.
You didn't hear it here first. Or something.
And you won't.
All right, let's do the Technology Bites Info Shot all the way in San Antonio. Peter Hughes, take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, here's an interesting study. Apparently, most users want 4 to 4.5 inches. And what that has to do with is smartphone screens. That is apparently the ideal smartphone screen size. Sorry, my cough is still not all the way gone. Strategy analytics determined from a study. The researchers talked to existing American and British owners and found that the, quote, sweet spot for a phone was between 4 and 4.5 inches as long as the phone was reasonably thin. I don't know how they, you know, you got to wonder for a study like that, just talking to people and asking them, you just wonder. I question somewhat the validity of that. I could understand if you interviewed people and you had mock-ups, if you had a physical device in front of them so that they could kind of decide their preference. But just asking based on the size, I don't know. About 90% of those asked chose a device larger than what they have, though the study didn't gauge how many would buy a larger phone if they really had the choice. Certain truisms about smartphone habits appeared likely to hold up. Women were more likely to consider a slightly smaller device than a man. Likewise, current Android phone owners were more likely to want a larger device than iPhone owners. The desire for bigger screens was pinned on the shift towards mobile web content, as well as gaming and video, which, of course, you would want a bigger screen for. Phone calls and traditional text messaging have been on the decline among smartphone owners. Although it's not a definitive study, it does suggest, according to them, that Apple may be losing an opportunity to get more users through its current 3.5-inch display, although this has not given it any problems becoming the top smartphone maker with its current size, although, you know, Android is more popular in total among smartphones, partly by larger screens overall and a wider range of options. You know, the thing about it, the range could spark a possible backlash to the latest crop of Android devices because of the even larger screens that they have. The 4.7-inch HTC One X, the 5-inch LG Optimus View and the 5.3-inch Samsung Galaxy Note are bigger than the size class that the survey said people really were wanting. One of the problems with the bigger, with this type of size is genuine usability problems, like not being able to reach parts of the screen without shifting position, discomfort during voice calls, yeah, when the phone is bigger than your face, and trouble fitting into smaller pockets. Apple's thing, you know, yeah, maybe they have a 3.5-inch screen, but they also come out with a new phone just about every year, and so it could get pretty simple pretty quick. All they would have to do is release a new phone with a bigger screen, like the rumors were last year. Speaking of which, not rumory, but if you're going to go stand in line and get a third-generation iPad, the time that you're looking for is 8 a.m. local time in the U.S. and 9 other countries. For all our listeners in, let's see, Australia, Canada, France, Germany, Hong Kong, Japan, Singapore, Switzerland, and the U.K., also Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. In addition to Apple's retail stores, like the new one in Highland Village in Houston, the new iPad will also be available in the U.S. at Best Buy, Radio Shack, Sam's Club, Target, and Walmart on launch day. The 4G LTE versions will also be available at AT&T and Verizon retail stores in the U.S. You wonder, if the iPad was available at enough places, would there be so many lines in so many different places that people wouldn't know what to do or what it was about? Or would the lines be so long that you wouldn't know, were you in line for the Walmart or the Best Buy or the Target? Anyways, you know all the details about you know the iPad 3 versus, you know, the new iPad versus the iPad 2. The prices are the same as last year as the iPad 2. This is an interesting one. New iPads purchased at an Apple retail store come with free personal setup service, which helps customers customize their iPad by setting up email, installing software from the App Store, and more. Apple also offers its personal pickup service at U.S. retail stores, allowing customers to shop and buy from anywhere, then pick up their purchase at any retail store. So that's just an interesting the personal setup thing. I think there are people who certainly would benefit from that. So that would be a reason, if you're going to do it, that you would want to go to the Apple store to get it, as opposed to, I don't think Walmart, if you talk about a personal setup thing, I don't think they'll understand or agree that it's the same thing that you're thinking. On the rumor front, because, gosh, we got to have a rumor, an Apple rumor about something, because, you know, the world would stop if there weren't. It's sort of not that new. Per Electric Pig, rumors of a larger 15-inch MacBook Air continue to surface, with the latest claim suggesting Apple is gearing up to launch a larger ultra-portable notebook in April. So that one, at least we'll know pretty quick. A Mac accessory maker who spoke at the CU Exposed show this week indicated that Apple is likely to launch its 15-inch MacBook Air in April. The anonymous source said the thin and light notebook would be similar to current MacBook Air models, with ports on both sides and no optical drive or Ethernet port. The vendor reportedly speculated that the new 15-inch MacBook Air would, quote, effectively kill the MacBook Pro for the average consumer. They suggested that the new MacBook Air could even replace the 15-inch MacBook Pro, leaving the Pro moniker only to Apple's high-end 17-inch lunch tray model. If you've ever seen one in person, that's about the size of it. So whether it's known as a Pro or an Air, it's been rumored since last year. And, of course, there's all the things that it doesn't have, like an optical drive, although with the growth of the App Store, the Mac App Store, not the phone App Store, it's a lot easier to get software and just download and install it that way, as opposed to – there's also a drive share function where it'll let you borrow the optical drive from a nearby Windows or Apple machine, in case you were wondering about it. There's a separate rumor that claimed Apple was forced to drop NVIDIA's next-generation Kepler graphics processor from its next low- and mid-range MacBook upgrades, leaving the systems to rely on Intel's integrated graphics solutions. Not clear if that one's for sure. The company's higher-end 15- and 17-inch MacBook Pros feature dedicated graphics processors from AMD. So I guess that would be bad news for NVIDIA if they're going to drop it. A thinner and lighter 15-inch MacBook Pro without a dedicated graphics card could be difficult to differentiate from a 15-inch MacBook Air, which is why the anonymous accessory maker sees Apple effectively killing the Pro model. In anticipation of an upcoming MacBook refresh, the company's manufacturers are reportedly prepared to build and ship a new product in less than 90 days. So we'll keep an eye on that one. Certainly that's April's not far off. It's the middle of March, so it's Pi Day, in case you didn't notice, as the in-studio crew frantically cram Pi in their faces and hope that maybe this is a long info shot, which there's a couple more stories, so they have some more time to slather the pie-y goodness down their gullets. Thunderbolt, you know, is on Apple, but it is not an Apple-only thing. Intel is heavily involved. And Intel's Dave Salvatore has been talking about Thunderbolt's future. And the interesting thing they're talking about is optical versions of the high-speed interconnect will arrive this year. The copper version, which basically uses copper wire, same connector, copper wire, is cheaper and can carry 10 watts of power. So it can carry juice and a signal. But it can only run a maximum distance of 6 meters, about 18 feet. While the fiber version loses the ability to power devices, because obviously you're not going to send electricity over fiber, it's reportedly far faster and capable of running to the tens of meters. So that way you can put your laptop on one place and then have your monitor 30 or 40 meters. Well, that doesn't make sense. Have your backup drive or some other device 30 or 40 feet away. Mr. Salvatore wouldn't commit to a release date or how much more will be expected to pay for the cables. But given that we're also expecting to see PCI Express 3.0 bolted onto the Thunderbolt standard soon, it might be a good idea to save up, because then you can have a whole rack full of high-speed stuff. And to go with that, you know, there's been some different, you know, quantum computing and carbon nanotubes that are sort of the current set of near-futuristic. They're keeping things talking about it and how it's going to come soon and hasn't quite yet arrived. Another one of those is terahertz bandwidth, terahertz technologies. Apparently, though, the University of Pittsburgh seems to have no qualms with moving forward on terahertz bandwidth, announcing a new physical basis for it. Those involved managed to have success in generating a frequency comb, quote, dividing a single color of light into a series of evenly spaced spectral lines for a variety of uses that spans a more than 100 terahertz bandwidth. How does it do it? It does it by exciting a coherent collective of atomic motions in a semiconductor silicon crystal. And don't we all enjoy exciting a coherent collective of atomic motions in a semiconductor silicon crystal? For those who managed to make it through the technobabble, we're told the ability to modulate light with such a bandwidth could, quote, increase the amount of information carried by more than 1,000 times compared to the volume carried with today's technology. So that would be nice when data could increase by 1,000 times. You know, obviously that lets you have some big bandwidth. No talk about the distance or any of those kinds of issues. But hey, I'll take 1,000 times faster, 1,000 times faster bandwidth of stuff. Anytime, any day, you just bring it by the studio and I'll take it. Finally, Chrome is jumping onto the Windows 8 Metro desktop split, which means some programs may be pulling double duty in your task manager, one for the classic environment and one for the fancy, you know, Metro, you know, the squares and rectangles, touchy-feely kind of interface. Google is not going to be outdone by Mozilla. They recently told Mashable that it's building a version of Chrome optimized for Windows 8's more stylized setting. Quote, our goal is to be able to offer our users a speedy, simple, secure Chrome experience across all platforms, which includes both the desktop and Metro versions of Windows 8. To that end, Google's in the process of building a Metro version of Chrome, along with improving desktop Chrome in Windows 8, such as adding enhanced touch support. Where did the browser touch you? The representative didn't say when the Metro version of the app would be ready, but hopefully it won't be too far from Windows 8's own launch day. And on that touching note, that's the news.
Man, it is Pi Day in this studio for sure. It is so Pi. All right. What is this pie? What kind of pie is this?
This is the Bayou Goo.
The Bayou Goo.
Which is, actually is my favorite pie there. It's a lot of people's favorite pie there. But there are many pies at the House of Pies. This one is mine. It's a layer of sweet cream. So it's a regular pie crust. Layer of sweet cream, some walnuts, I believe. Some kind of nuts. I think it's walnuts. Chocolate mousse. Or a chocolate, like French chocolate, I think. And then whipped cream on top, and then chocolate shavings and some like powdered sugar or something.
And some slivered nuts.
It's almost inedible.
It's tragically delicious.
It's frightening how rich this is. How unlike diet food it is.
Diet food.
All right. Well, I'm going to be posting some pictures of the pie. You know, I was driving through town.
Tuned into this great show about pie.
Pie mathemagicians. All right. So it is a computer show, and the pie eating, you know, the pie experience, you know, while awesome, is not going to dominate the entire show, or is it?
Really, we're not going to become a foodie show, and then we can add in some hipster South by Southwesting?
Well, we've talked about food, and we've photographed the food, and we've eaten the food. This is a foodie show now.
I described the food.
But nobody hates it.
Can you describe the food?
You have to review it now.
Somebody has to hate it.
No, wait. Pete is the real foodie because he's read the reviews, knows about the pie, and has shunned the pie.
Maybe Dwight is.
No, Dwight. Maybe
this is why Dwight didn't show up.
You think, maybe? I don't think so.
He's scared of pie day?
Yeah, he's scared of pie.
Well, I could take the three. It's the decimal point and everything after it that it really intimidates me. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to call in the Technology Bites for our Pie Day extrava bonanza.
Hopped up on sugar.
I tell you, man.
I can feel it coursing through my veins.
My lips are tingling. All right.
Bear's not even sitting right next to you.
No. But you can't see below the table either. Why is my CPU all maxed out on my computer? I don't like
that. Did you get some pie in there? Maybe in your USB slot?
Keep your pie out of my USB slot. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse will screen calls between munching on the pie, but he's a pie muncher. He's going to close the door so he can be a little bit more isolated and have a one-on-one experience with the callers. All right. So while we're waiting for him to screen the calls, I don't know what we're going to do. 713-526-5738. One call's coming in. Groovehouse is now answering that phone, getting it ready for putting on the air. You know, whenever we have a person missing from the show, it's always just kind of upsets my rhythm. You can always count on Dwight for, you know, not paying attention and then being coaxed into the conversation at the very least. But yes, and I'm kind of multitasking here, so I'm hopefully going to get some pie pictures posted. Pie pictures posted. Ooh, alliteration. I like alliteration. Are you enjoying your pie there, Afflicted? Are you, how many decimal points of deliciousness is it? We're half, you've have
I'm pie. Having about a third of a radian of pie.
Third of a radian of pie? All right. Well, we've milked the pie for about all it's worth here tonight. If you do call in to be on the air, don't dominate the phone time too much with the Groove House. He'd like to get you in the queue and so we can get you on the air. 713-526-5738. All right. There's a lightsaber battle. All right, so Groove House.
Yes. Yes.
They just heard the Cobra Commander hiss. I know that was Serpentor.
Do we have a call that wants to be on the air with us tonight?
We do.
We do?
Yes, on Pi Day.
On Pi Day?
On the Pi Show. Sugar hopped up on the Sugar Show. I can't even talk.
Use your words.
All right, then.
Sounds like.
Who wants to be on the air with us?
All right, up first on the show today, we are going to take Mike.
Mike, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Thank you, sir. I'm trying to know, is it when you do a modem test and it says fail, does that mean the modem is bad?
Say that again?
I did a modem test.
A modem test?
Yes.
So
it says modem test failed. Does it mean the modem is bad?
Are you sure that your computer even has a modem? A lot of newer computers don't have modems.
I'm not sure, but because I was trying to go online, but since 2 days, I could not get online. I was seeing errors.
Do you use dial-up as your type of internet access? Do you dial in using a modem, or do you have cable or broadband?
I use dial-up.
You use dial-up. Okay, and so this computer has successfully dialed up before?
Right. I've been using it for, I bought it 3 years ago.
Okay.
Just 2 days ago, I tried to go online, and I could not connect, so I tried to reach Microsoft. I could not get in touch with them.
Well, Microsoft's not going to help you necessarily with a modem problem or a getting online problem. Who provides your internet access?
Yeah, MSN.
Oh, MSN does? Okay. Well, since you started, was there something that might have happened prior to you having this problem? Did you have any other kind of hardware errors, or was there a lightning strike, or did you have a power surge?
Only time, 3 days ago, we have a heavy rain over here, so I unplugged the wire that goes to the wall.
Okay.
Then, because sometime in the past, my computer stopped working. I took it to a shop. They told me that it was a lightning that went through the line and damaged it.
But it wasn't this computer that happened.
No. It was my old computer.
I got you. Okay.
So I unplugged the line because we are having heavy storm. Then 2 days ago I tried to go online, but
All right, I'm interrupting. It's been a while since I've tried to troubleshoot a modem issue, but. Have you checked the wall jack that you're plugged into to make sure that you have dial tone?
Yes, I did that.
You plug the phone in, you check for dial tone.
Right. I plugged the phone to make sure I have dial tone. I did that, and when I did the modem test, it gave me instruction of things to do, like power down the computer, unplug the, the wire to the wall, and everything I did. Then I run the modem test again. It says failed.
Well, it does sound like it could be a faulty modem, like the modem is defective. I mean, it is possible.
It's about 4 years I bought this computer. Can it go bad like that, the modem?
Well, yeah, they can go bad. I mean, they're just like any other piece of electronic equipment. They're sensitive to power surges, and they can possibly fail. The good news is that a replacement modem is not terribly expensive.
Right.
I mean, you can buy a USB modem, a 56K modem, for probably like $20.
Oh, USB modem?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it easy for me to put it, or do I have to take it?
No, it's, if you buy a USB external modem, it's super easy to install. You'll just have to reconfigure your dialer profile to access the new modem once it's installed, but it shouldn't be a very difficult process at all. You can buy it, hook it up to the computer without much trouble at all.
I don't have to put it inside the computer?
No, you plug it up to a USB port, and okay. It connects that way.
Okay.
I mean, if it's not something you're comfortable with, I'm sure that the place that if you buy it from a computer store that they could...
They'd probably do it for you, but it really is as simple as plugging it in. I mean, the hardest part's just going to be, you know, running the configuration. But if, it, you know, however you got online the first time with MSN, you know, if they sent you an installer or they sent you a CD, you can probably just rerun that and point it to the new modem and you'd be in good shape. Okay. And Jay's...
In this area we live, we don't have... I tried to get a DSL.
Oh, and they don't have it down in the area?
Yeah, through AT&T. They don't have it. Well, MSN doesn't provide DSL anyway. AT&T, they don't have it either. It's only... I'm trying to, you know, with this problem coming up, I'm considering to use the Comcast. So I like my MSN, you know.
Are you tied to MSN just because of an email address, or what's keeping you on MSN?
Pardon? Can you ask me to... Can you repeat the question for me, please?
Why are you... I mean, what ties you to MSN? Is it because you have an email address with them that people know how to access, or is there a reason why you wouldn't consider switching to another provider?
Oh, yeah, it's one of the reasons.
Okay. Well, I tell you what. What I recommend that you do is see about replacing that modem. You can probably still use MSN while connected to high speed if you were interested in doing that. And that might be an option for you, but I wish you a lot of luck. Thanks for your call tonight. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
How's the pie eating going?
I've thrown in the towel.
Thrown in the towel? There's half a pie left.
That's
pie.
That's reflected tonight around midnight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Put that in your cube and eat it. All right. Groove House.
How's that pie over there with you?
I inhaled a little bit of it. It's quite breathable. Not.
Not breathable?
Not breathable. All right, so who's up next?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to take George.
George, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening. I have a sort of a general question about Microsoft Access.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Your favorite topic, I'm sure. The situation is it's a small office environment with like three computers running Access 2003, and the situation there is people want to be using the database simultaneously, adding records from any one of these three computers, and so they can all fire up and get to the database, but there is an issue with adding a record. When you go to save the added record, it generates an error message that says you can't save the record because another user has the file open. And so my question is, I thought that you could have multiple users working in Access database as long as they weren't trying to save the same record in the file. That is, you know, they're working on different records, but the same file, that was okay, but this diagnostic makes it seem like that's not okay. So
I don't know if that, and I may be wrong here, I don't think that with the personal version of Access, so just, you know, the desktop is the keyword there, version of Access, that it supported multi-users. Now, I know that you can tie Access into an ODBC data source, and then multiple versions of Access can tie into that. But the whole point of Access is it was supposed to be a personal desktop database, and it's not prone to multi-users. Do you have a budget at all?
I have not explored that topic yet. I'm just trying to establish whether or not we're trying to get the this product to do something it's not actually ever going to do.
You are a little bit. You know, I don't know where your level of competence with databases are, but, you know, the pay route would be to go and install MS SQL Server on a server somewhere. And then you can actually, you know, if you've got forms and if you've got things that are you're actually using in Access, you can just, you know, very easily go in and point that. It's just you're setting up a new data source name at DSN and you just point it to the SQL Server. If you have a little bit more know-how or want to bring in consultants and you don't want to pay anything, MySQL, which is a database package on Linux, is free. You can run that and then you can either, you know, go back to MS Access with ODBC drivers, or you can get something like PHP MyAdmin, which is a web front end that lets people go in and do different stuff. And it's, you know, that's kind of what we let our power users do when they want to get into the database. So it's free, but again, the learning curve is a little bit steeper.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so the licensing for the Microsoft solution to this for let's say no more than five users would be approximately $1 gazillion.
No, I'm guessing it's probably a few hundred. Jay may know on the price of it, between the three and five, probably.
Well, in order to run SQL Server, you're going to have a computer that's running some version of Microsoft Server, so Server 2008.
Right.
Or something like that. So you're going to have to have, so there's hardware involved, and then there's the operating system involved, and then there's a license for SQL Server involved, and then each copy of Access database Access that you're going to be using to connect to it.
Okay.
So that would be your cost.
Is this inside a firewalled environment? This is like, you should just go Google MySQL and PHP MyAdmin. And then there are a lot of operating systems that are based on Linux that you can actually just type install Apache, install MySQL, install PHP MyAdmin, and then you're ready to go. You've got everything there. And then it's pretty easy to import stuff because you can export out of Access, import into there, and you're good to go. But again, it's really simple once you've done it once. If you've never done it, that first time it can be kind of daunting. So
okay, well, it sounds daunting for the first-time user, but at least if I know that I'm not trying to get the software to do something that it's basically not ever going to do, then I can just redirect my energy.
Yeah, I think that's like
why people pay the big bucks for database administrators.
Yes.
It's going to take time or money. You get to choose.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks very much.
All right. Thanks for your call.
You bet. Bye.
Actually, it's going to take both.
Both.
All right. getting my Pi Day pictures prepared.
It's the Microsoft show tonight.
It is the Microsoft show tonight, sort of. Are you okay? I think the voices were coming from that guy had a cross line or something.
The first caller
was calling from somewhere.
Right.
At first, I thought I heard myself in the background, like the radio wasn't turned down.
I wonder if that's why his modem wasn't working.
Because he's talking on the
because cross lines,
crosstalk.
There might have been some crosstalk on his phone line now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could totally.
That might.
No, I just heard it.
Oh, I hear it again.
It's us.
Oh, we've got crosstalk. Yeah.
It's feedback. It's like, it's the delay.
Like coming from outer space.
Oh, I turn it all the way up again?
Yeah, turn it up.
It's the phone.
Wow, I feel like
so Bob's having a conversation.
It's delay because it's all obscenities if you listen real close.
It's radio signals coming back to us from space.
They're bouncing off that big flying saucer right outside the station.
Bouncing off Jay's head.
it's a countdown.
It's the phone lines.
All right, who's got some tinfoil?
It sounds like there's like four or five things going on.
Party line! Let's go!
Like maybe like, you know, it's like the BBC feed and us and like several other things all feeding through the phone line. All the Democratic group. Yeah.
Maybe it's encoded. Maybe it's something we need to figure out.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know really know what to do about it though, because when we take calls on the air, I have to have it up enough that you know you can.
I wonder if it's because of the new when they replace the dump. That's
got something crossed or grounded weird.
I don't know
something. Yeah,
but it's not just us. I mean, I can hear other stuff in it. I can hear some guy with a British voice. Here, I'll try it again.
It's the British Jay Lee.
Yeah, the
BBC. Now, do you have any of the feeds from the satellite or anything turned up?
Nothing.
Just power down everything over there and we'll see.
Reboot.
Yep.
Reboot the show.
Everything's off over here except y'all's mics.
That's strange.
Everything's off over here except Peter, still happening. Y'all, still happening. Me and group, still happening.
Voices, there it goes.
That's the phone line.
I don't know if it matters, but I mean, I've got a BBC crew here with me.
So it's the phone.
Yeah, the phone line. It sounds like maybe like the BBC feed or something is
bleeding onto the line,
onto the phone lines, yeah. Or something.
Something.
It doesn't still have the two switches where you can switch the left and the right button, like you could like take the whatever.
Not on the phone line.
What about on the board? On the board at all for like the what other line might be from the satellite feed?
Yeah, can try that.
They're all off though.
No,
I didn't change it.
Oh well. Minor inconvenience.
All right, I'm about to publish some pictures to IRC. I need to actually put them on the website, I guess, so everybody can see them. All right, that's what I'm going to do now. 713-526-5738. You and somebody from the BBC will be on the air next.
Special guest.
Or something.
Should we take a call?
Yes, let's take a call, Groovehouse.
All right, then we're going to go to Bob.
Bob, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, hey guys, I really enjoyed the program. Thank you so much. Look, I got a question about blue screens. I've got an old Pavilion 6330, and that thing's been giving me blue screens since about last June. I have a contract with HP, and they've been fighting back and forth with me about what to do. And most recently, just started to do it almost every day. And what to do? Do a restart and a blue screen, and Windows recovery, and only by the way, I have a 20-inch flat screen, and I get bars on the screen before it goes wacko. So it's really been kind of pain in the butt. HP at this point in time, we did a recovery to set it back to an earlier previous version. So we did that, still did the exact same thing, and now they're sending me some discs to. They say something about taking all the software off or something.
Like they're talking about reloading the system.
Yeah, they're going to send me some of that stuff on there now. What they did say is you know, I have an external drive, a 1 terabyte drive that I've been using to store my data on. After last June, I lost all my data. I decided to put it somewhere I thought would be safe.
Right.
And now they're saying that's the problem. That's what's causing the problem at this point in time. So
how are they coming to that conclusion?
They just say in general that the external drives cause this blue screen problem. That's what they said.
Probably their thing is not to dog them, but anything that is connected to your Windows computer that's not, you know, related to their computer, they're going to tell you take it out.
Right.
And that's the thing. That's, I think, just part of their tech support thing is they strip it down to the bare metal.
And that's what I did. I mean, so once they said that, I made sure that it was disconnected before I fired it back up again.
Now, the only issue is, right?
When I tried to go ahead and eject it, it would never allow me to be able to eject it. And so I shut the computer down, and then when I shut down complete, then I go ahead and disconnect the external drive, and the next time I make sure it wasn't plugged up, and I started back up again. But it'd just be same old thing, same old routine. Now, one thing more, too. The last time my office was very, very quiet, and all of a sudden, before it crashed, I heard this buzzing sound coming out of the box. It kind of just kind of made a buzzing sound, and then out it went. And started going
back
to
the... Did it sound like the BBC?
It's somewhat similar. I think I might have heard the guys there. It might have been them for sure.
I mean, I do think reloading, you know, your system is probably the best way to go. If you've got some unexplained behavior, if it's blue screening every day,
yeah.
If you've got a way to back it up, just the idea of, you know, plugging an external drive sounds a little suspect.
Okay, here's what's going to happen is that they're going to take you through the process of completely reloading the system software. And for the time being, you're not going to reconnect your external USB drive. And then hopefully it'll solve the problem, I guess, kind of hopefully, but maybe it won't solve the problem. Your computer will continue to blue screen, at which point they're going to have to acknowledge the fact that it's not the external drive, it's not the software load, there's something wrong with the hardware.
Well, these guys on the phone, they were like committed to this F11 test, I guess, not F11, F9 test, and they say, well, you run this, you know, run it now. We ran it, and it passed all the memory and drives and all. Because, well, run it again, you know, and so we ran it again. Well, look, it's saying everything's okay on the computer.
Well, and it might well be. It might be. How long have you had the PC?
Probably now about 2.5 years, maybe.
Okay. If you have these kind of blue screens and random crashes, a system reload is a perfectly serviceable diagnostic. Now, it's still under warranty after 2.5 years. You bought a 3-year more year warranty from HP?
I bought a contract on it.
Okay. Well, that's good that you have it. I would go ahead and go through the rigmarole, and hopefully you can demonstrate to them that it's not. I mean, it might very well be. It's possible that if the hardware diagnostics aren't showing anything and they're not reporting any problem, they're not 100%, but they don't have a lot to go on. The techs for HP is same for Dell and all the other companies. They don't have a lot to go on to be able to determine what the problem is without some kind of error code from some diagnostic saying, yes, you've got bad memory, yes, you've got a bad hard drive. So you have to kind of go through all of these tests and all of this nonsense, seems like nonsense, to prove what the problem is. So if
they even offered at one point before they started the conversation about just stripping all the software off, about start talking about just sending a unit in. We may need to send a unit in, kind of thing.
Well, I've had some computers that have done this similar behavior, and it ended up being a problem with the CPU. We replaced the memory, we replaced the hard drive, and at that point, this was dealing with Dell. The techs that they contract with to be able to go out to the customer sites, because I work, we use it in our business, to go out to the site and fix the computer, they'll send you a hard drive, they'll send a tech out with a replacement system board, they'll send a tech out with a replacement monitor for a laptop, all that. But if they suspect, after all that doesn't fix it, that there's a problem with the CPU, you actually have to send the laptop to them to diagnose it. So it may very well be that you end up having to ship it back to them. The good news is that you get it taken care of while it's under warranty. The bad news is that you're without a PC during the time it takes you to ship it to them.
Have you guys seen where they have the bars on the screen like it? The bars running vertically across the screen. The screen just fills up with these bars, and then it goes into recovery mode or restart.
What do you mean, bar, like going like scrolling bars or just like random bars
just,
up and down?
No, just bars. It's going to be like railroad ties, small railroad ties up and down the left side or right side of the screen. It just kind of goes all the entire screen.
It sounds to me like there's something physically wrong with the PC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to move along. I know they're using a butterfly to figure this thing out. So.
That's unfortunate that you're going through that.
Yeah. Okay.
System reload and just don't even let the external drive touch it, and just see if it'll blue screen before you even plug in the external drive, and that way you can at least go back to them with something.
Yeah, I'll need to let it go for a few days because I'm always using it. I'm in business too as well, so I'm always plugging that thing back in with my information. So I'll just have to take a breath and just hold off for a few days and just watch it. Each day that I use it, maybe just do the internet or something.
Well, the thing is you back up your data that you have now. The files that you care about are going to be on your external hard drive. And if you create any new files or come up with new files that you need to save, you can, you can offload them to maybe a different USB drive or a thumb drive, or upload them to some online storage or something.
Yeah, maybe a thumb drive might be good. That might work as well.
Hey, what brand of external drive is that? Just out of curiosity.
I can't call the name, but it's one of the popular ones.
It's a mainstream one, though, like a Western Digital or a Mac Store or...
No, maybe not that.
Okay.
I got it from Fry's. It was on sale. It was one terabyte and whatever that thing was. So, and I had a conversation with them as well too. At the same time, I've called them, and then they start pointing fingers at each other. At that point in time, they say, "Well, it's your PC." The PC people say, "No, it's your drive." So, I hate to get caught up in that stuff.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I'm sorry that you're having so much trouble with it, but hopefully HP will satisfy you on that. And
we'll give it a whirl. We'll see how these discs go.
All right, good luck.
All right, thank you so much.
Thanks for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, I am posting Pi Day pictures.
I asked Barrett if he wanted, I asked both of y'all if you wanted any of the pecan pie. You said no, but Barrett held up his fingers, like a smidgen, and so I assume that meant he wanted a little less than half of it. So that's what I gave him.
he got like two-thirds of the... What is that?
I'm going to have piabetes before all this is over.
Piabetes? Nice.
See?
If
I wouldn't know any better, it's like I got the bite that was taken out. It's like...
It fell apart.
Afflicted chewed you a piece free...
Here you go.
He nodded out of the thing.
He was the official taste.
This is one of those little mini pecans. The second pie in our pie lineup is a...
we actually have 3.14 pies.
Every pie gets a little smaller.
We have 3.14 pies?
Mm-hmm. How's that? There's a couple more coming.
We've
had two. We've got one, and then a 0.14 of a pie coming.
Really?
Yeah. Later on tonight.
Wow. So, and the second pie is one of those little pecan pies in the little tin and the, you know, shrink wrapped and put on a shelf and forgotten about.
So I'm just curious, how many digits do y'all have pie memorized out to?
Two.
So you've got 3.14 down.
I totally have it down.
Any more?
I might flex my muscles during Barrett time.
Yeah. Okay. Possibly. I'll take that.
Because I've got...
Spoiler alert.
I've got.
How many are there?
I've definitely got out to five places memorized, and I might be able to get six and seven.
We have a listener who has like 16 places memorized.
Whoa!
Actually,
Ontario.
I want to say I knew two guys when I was in high school that would every day before math class they would walk into the room and they would both walk up to the chalkboard and start writing out pi to see which one could memorize it further. And they had it memorized out to at least 40 or 50 places.
I saw a video of a little kid. He was probably like fourth grade, that's got, I think, almost 100,000, if I'm correct. And actually, he's
100,000.
He's up there. He's doing it. And you can see the person's going along checking off the digits. It's literally like multiple pages of single-spaced, you know, 80 characters per line.
Or his numbers. Eyes rolled back in his head when he's doing this.
No, I don't think he's autistic or anything like that. He seemed pretty normal.
He's not.
So I thought, surely there's got to be, you know, he's got to have a, you know, some kind of advantage. But no, I guess he just doesn't have a lot of friends, maybe. I don't know.
Could have photographed.
My son has memorized pi to 116 decimal places.
Your son?
Wow.
Yeah, off the old.
Chip off the old.
I guess.
Old pi.
The pi block. Wow. All right.
The old circular block.
That's some geek cred.
That's huge Greek cred. Geek cred.
Greek?
You're not going to embarrass me again, son.
Say it in Greek numbers.
Yes.
Anybody could do 100 places.
All right. 713-526-5738. Who's up next, Groovehouse?
All right. Up next, we are going to take Eric.
Eric, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Show in the history of radio where, you know, technological issues are, you know, pretty much good radio.
So, makes the show better.
And you know, like a good a solid plurality of your listening audience, when y'all turn the feedback up, was going all like Whistler and Contact, all like, you know, yeah, see, eventually, oh my gosh, this is from Alpha Centauri, you know. But anyway, love your show. God bless you, and God bless KPFT. That's all I got.
All right, thanks for your call.
See ya.
Wow.
The only show gets better when there's problems.
It's only going to keep getting better.
That's right.
You know, it's the way we flounder that makes us so
interesting. We have a lot of opportunities for greatness.
Some people seek greatness. Other people have it mistaked upon them.
Why don't they have E-Day?
E-Day?
Mm-hmm.
What's that? E.
Oh, like logarithm kind of? Or just divide everything by 10?
It's, No, he's also
the natural log.
He's like pi. Yeah, it's a irrational number. And I used to know it also to a few places because I got an engineering degree and I used it all the time. No longer, 2.something.
All right, we got time for another call. Let's do that.
Very well,
Groovehouse.
Yes,
who's up?
All right, we're gonna take Stephanie.
Stephanie, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey guys, happy Pi Day.
Happy Pi Day.
Woo! I'm calling because I just like some advice. I'm upgrading from a MacBook Pro. I used to do, editing for film on Final Cut Pro. And I just got a tower. Now I'm looking for a monitor and I went to, for pricing monitors. And, of course everybody is all about that Thunderbolt right now.
Yeah, I just saw a 27-inch Thunderbolt. My main finance guy at my company has just gotten bit by the Mac bug hard, and so he's got a MacBook Air, and he bought himself a Mac Mini, and he bought the 27-inch Thunderbolt monitor. And he's using the Air and the Thunderbolt monitor as his work computer now. He's his own personal stuff, but he's just got rid of his work computer, and that's what he's using. That thing is magnificent to look at.
Oh, yeah. It's gorgeous, and I have the Lux, but it's kind of out of my price range right now. So what I was wondering, is there anything that's at all comparable that, you know, could give me some true colors for video editing, or do I just have to suck it up and wait till I get that cash?
I don't know much about monitor calibration, but I have to believe that there are people out there doing video editing and doing getting true color representation with many other monitors that are on the market beside the Apple monitor. I just don't know which brand.
Well, the problem is the ones that have that kind of color profile are going to be priced similarly, maybe not quite as expensive, but they're still going to be more expensive. One thing to think about is the cheaper monitors, at least if you need one to get by with, if you use the same monitor, at least it's going to be consistent. So if you try to kind of color match, then it's going to match, even if it's not going to be necessarily exactly the same as what it's going to display on, say, better equipment.
They're also called, I know that there are color calibration programs too, where you can get more or less like a swatch of color, and then you can hold it up to the monitor, and then, you know, it pull up a certain graphic that has that same color, and then you can kind of do your tuning to get it as close as you can. If you get a monitor that, you know, you can control the different levels. Some of the cheap ones still let you do that, or cheaper ones let you do that.
Okay. Well, do you guys have a suggestion, like, where I could start, you know, contrasting and comparing, like, online, or is there place to go for something like that?
For what? For looking for monitors or for...
Right.
I would, you do video editing, right?
Right.
So are you involved in any online discussion forums or anything for video editors?
You know, not really. I'm not, you know, a true, like, if I don't know how to do something, I really just go to YouTube, and it's like everybody's got a tutorial for something on there.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that if you go to a discussion...
I really haven't been having much luck about, you know, people comparing monitors.
Go check out video. There's a website called videomaker.com, and there are a couple threads that people are saying, hey, I've got this and this and this. I need a monitor to do editing on. So there are a few different discussions. One's like talking about if I've got money, no object, and then there's also, hey, I'm on a budget. So it's videomaker.com. And I'm sure if you just Google for, like, you know, video editing monitor review, that's more or less what I put in, you're going to find a few different hits. So just look for something current.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Good luck.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Bye.
All right. Well, we need to take a short break here before we go back to the phones, and that's what we're going to do. So you're listening to Technology Bites Eats Pie on KPFT. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
on a sugar high.
Nom, nom, nom.
Nom, 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 nom. Nom, 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 nom. Boink!
PhotoFest Biennial is the first and longest-running biennial of its kind in the United States and one of the largest photography events in the world. Over 1,000 artists from 33 countries will participate in the PhotoFest exhibitions and activities. PhotoFest brings the world to Houston and Houston to the world. The PhotoFest 2012 Biennial is a citywide event with over 120 participating museums, art galleries, nonprofit arts organizations, universities, civic organizations, and corporate spaces across Houston, Harris County, and Galveston. Opportunities to interact with artists, photography bookstores, and book signings, free guided exhibit tours, bus and bicycle tours to galleries, and activities for students are all part of the festival, and most events are free and open to the public. Details on PhotoFest programs can be found on the PhotoFest website at PhotoFest, that's PhotoFest.org. This is KPFT, Houston.
Renowned Lebanese oud player, composer, and arranger Marcel Khalifa will be in Houston on Friday, April 20th, appearing at Jones Hall at 8 p.m. He will perform his new concert program, Fall of the Moon, an homage to the poet Mahmoud Darwish. This is Marcel's first concert since 2007 and will feature Umaym El Khalil and Yola Khalife, as well as his acclaimed ensemble El Mayadeen. The music of Marcel Khalife and the poetry of Mahmoud Darwish resonates throughout the Middle East and the world and now can be heard here in Houston. This event is presented and sponsored by the Arab American Educational Foundation in association with the Society for the Performing Arts. Again, that's Friday, April 20th at 8 p.m. in Jones Hall. For more information and tickets, please visit www.theaaef.org or www.spahouston.org.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Barrett Time! Barrett Time! Barrett Time!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Barrett Time!
Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. And I'm going to ask Flitted to pot down the music in a few minutes. You'll know when, but I was too busy with pie to ask you before. So today is March 14th, or 314, get it? Meaning that it's National Pie Day. So rather than ask how many digits people do know, let's ask how many digits people knew. The Bible lists the value as 3. In 480, Chung Chin calculated the value out to 6 digits. 1610, Ludolf von Quellen worked out an estimation to 34 places. Probably eclipses where most people know right now. And 1706, John Mason calculated 100 decimals of the digits for pi. 1807, William Shanks cranked out 707 digits of pi. Only the first 527 were correct. It took until 1944 for the actual 528th decimal place to be discovered, and in 1947, the total was raised to 808. Today, in the era of supercomputers, we're able to compute the value of pi out to hundreds of millions of digits. So how can you remember all those digits? Hey, Flicted, with a simple song, of course. All right. Here we go. 6 4 7 0 9 3 8 4 4 6 0 9 5 5 0 5 8 2 2 3 1 7 2 5 3 5 9 4 0 8 1 2 8 4 8 1 1 7 4 5 0 2 8 4 1 0 2 7 0 1 9 3 8 5 2 1 1 0 5 5 5. All right, Jay, you're up next. Take it.
No. 3.14. Yay!
All right. That's it for your Pi Day mnemonic, and that's that for Barrett Time. That was 195 digits we got through before we killed it.
Wow. And I was going to say, that song could go on forever.
Yeah.
All right. Post a link to the YouTube video, yes, embed right it in the page, and put your thing in there. That'll be great. All right. So
it's actually streaming live, and they're doing it live.
We now join Pi being recited already in progress. All right, so if you go to geekradio.com, I have pictures up from Pi Day for geekradio.com. Dwight Silverman has already responded on Twitter that he has no pie for Pi
Day. Serves him right. He could be here and have pie.
He's a horrible procrastinator. I mean, he like knows this presentation is coming. There's a radio show on Wednesday.
Flicked's going to be here. It is
Pi Day.
It's Pi Day. Yeah, he's here every Wednesday. He knows it's coming. The presentation, it's not like they just asked him today.
Yeah, or he overslept.
Poor Dwight. This is what happens when you're not here. I'm just glad. You know, as the brunt of so many not here jokes, it's going to be on the dishing.
Soon to be more.
Soon to be more. That's right. All right. So, wow. That song just stays with you.
It does.
It's infectious, yeah.
I don't remember the words, but I can hum. I'm just.
I hear a Flying Fish Sailor song coming.
You'd have to memorize the lyrics, or you could just make them up. Chances are no one would know.
Yeah, really. Somebody's going to take you to task. So, you said.
You said.
Speaking of Flying Fish Sailors, aren't y'all?
Yes, the Flying Fish Sailors, the world's greatest folk band ever.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well.
Math folk band.
Mathematically speaking,
math
the best.
Folk.
Yeah, well, nerd folk.
Nerd folk.
Yeah, the Flying Fish Sailors were playing, of all places, the Kima Boardwalk for St. Patrick's Day on Saturday. So 1 to 5. Yay. Come on out. Ride a roller coaster. If that doesn't make you sick, listen to one of our songs. We'll get you going. It'll be awesome. Yeah, we hadn't played St. Patrick's in the last couple of years. We've been, you know, I don't know.
Will sea shanties be sung?
Sea shanties, alien abduction shanties, coffee shanties, all the songs.
All the shanties.
We'll set your heart to Dublin.
On your way to Dublin. All right. So we're going to go back to Technology Bites. But yeah, if you want to check out the pie pictures, I mean, obviously you want to look at pictures of pie from the Foodie Show up on geekradio.com or, you know, I'm a big foodie goo head. com.
I like that picture of Flicted in the pie. Like, if every time I saw Flicted, he had pie like that, that would be pretty awesome.
He would be your best friend ever.
Yeah.
You know, I would
eat his face.
I need to put together a slideshow of obscured Flicted faces.
Did you say eat my face?
Yes, he did.
Wow. And Pan Man.
Only on Pi Day.
Eat my face.
And Pan Man?
Yes. Look it up.
Okay.
Look it up.
I'm not going to explain it to you.
You look it up.
I like the way
Barrett. Go ahead.
Barrett looks like he's sneaking up on his pie.
Look out.
Look out. Hey, baby.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next, we are going to take Mark.
Mark, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
More of a geek back in the 80s, or not 80s, 90s, when Macs were on the Motorola processors. You know, I popped memory off and put new memory on. I put new processors in there. I put video cards and stuff like that. But now I'm just an old man, and my daughter called.
You are
like
old.
In the 80s again.
Is that my daughter or my father? Come here, right. Closer. Let me touch your face.
Yeah, she just calls me dad. So anyway, I bought her a MacBook Pro. And it was 4 gig memory in the box, and I had them put 8 gig in there, and the thing just never worked out of the box. And I talked to the reseller, and they said take it to the Apple store.
Who was the reseller?
Mac Mall.
Okay.
And the Apple store said it's not the 8 gig of memory I put in there. They said it's not Apple memory. There's no such thing is not being Apple memory, right?
They probably mean that it's not their
Apple
official
branded.
Yeah, that specific SKU or, you know, part number for that specific memory is probably what they mean. It's not Apple blessed memory.
All right, so basically it doesn't work because they put that memory in there.
Right, so the Mac Mall installed memory that Apple doesn't support.
Right, and it won't work. So they.
What happens if you take the memory out? Does it work then?
Well, they put the original 4 gig back in, and it works.
Okay, so since the MacBook was bought, you know, technically as an Apple product, Apple will support that. It sounds like to me, Mac Mall owes you memory that will work,
or right. A refund for the memory,
or a refund for the memory.
Right. Okay.
I mean, 4 gig is plenty. Is not shabby at all. It's a lot. And I just upgraded my MacBook Pro to, I think it was 8 gig.
4 is plenty. Especially, I mean, I doubt your daughter's doing, you know, heavy duty video editing and stuff.
This is her computer. You know, to go to she's going to college in the fall. This will be her computer, and she's just going to do, you know, Microsoft Word and, you know, Excel maybe whatever. So I should go back to Mac Mall and demand them to send me, you know, appropriate memory.
I mean, bottom line is it doesn't work when it's in there.
Right. And then Mac Mall put the old memory back, and did they see it work?
Well, no. The Apple store put the old memory back.
Ah, okay. Well, if you haven't contacted the Mac Mall since this has happened,
right.
I would let them know that this is what you've discovered, is that the MacBook
right.
works fine with the memory that came with it.
Right.
And when they took the memory that Mac Mall installed into it out, it you know, it started working. So
Right. It was Mac Mall that told me to go to an Apple store after, you know, I talked to their help desk. They
right.
said, you know, go to an Apple store. And they thought it was a memory issue. They just thought it wasn't seated correctly. But like I say, the Apple store just said it's not Apple memory.
Right. And did they try reseating it and see if it would work for you?
Right. And they did diagnostics. They had the PC for like, a, you know, 2 days, and they reinstalled stuff. And they just said, like I say, they said, in quotes, it's not Apple memory. And they put the original memory. I told them, put the original 4 gigs back in, and I'll get with Mac Mall.
So it sounds like they went above and beyond the Call of Duty.
What I mean by it's not Apple memory is if it had been Apple memory, they would have done what they would have replaced it. They would have given you new memory that did work.
Oh, okay.
As opposed to it being some kind of
second part or third. You know, if it was Apple memory that was sold to you by Apple, then
right.
they're not going to support it. They're not going to replace it.
Right. Okay.
So it's memory from a. From a memory store, you know, from a memory vendor. So you have to get that satisfied from Mac Mall.
Okay. Cool. Bye.
All right. Thanks for your call. Bye. Oh, still got that song in my head.
This mm-hmm. might help. My girlfriend texted me and said that, you know.
Does she have a
they
name?
Went and got a pie. Yes.
Okay.
And
my girlfriend.
They have pie? What?
Go. And her daughters were, started singing, it's pie day, gonna eat pie on pie. You know,
vaguely,
Rebecca Black, Friday.
Friday. Oh, I've successfully avoided hearing that song.
I think, isn't that Rebecca Black?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but did the daughters auto-tune themselves? That's the question.
That I don't know.
Did they ban themselves from YouTube? That's the question. All right. Pie day. Yippee. 713-526-5738. We're hopped up on sugar and spice and everything nice.
Woo!
And ready to answer calls.
No snip snails or puppy dog tails here. All right, Groove House?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we are going to take Jeremy.
Jeremy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. I was just calling to kind of give a little bit of 2 cents. I know a caller had called in before looking for a monitor, and I just recently purchased a monitor that I was happy with, and so I wanted to just give a little bit of information that I learned in the process.
All right.
Buying my monitor. So I guess when I was looking, I've found out that, the current technologies that are basically out there today in the market are called TFT technology, and a lot of the cheaper monitors that you buy that are most typically in the store are referred to as TN monitors, but they have the more expensive models that are the IPS models, and so they're both TFT technologies, but this is a little bit more expensive, and with the advantage of those more expensive ones, which is kind of what the caller was looking for, is that it has more accurate color display.
Mm-hmm.
And also the TN monitors have bad viewing angles, so the colors skew whenever you go off of like the central viewing angle. And for the IPS technologies, they have different types like H and S. But kind of the advantage is they have an IPS, what's called an IPS-E model, which is not quite as, you know, great as these other monitors that you might spend between $800 and $1,000 to buy to get really accurate colors. But they have an IPS-E technology, which is not quite as good, but it's still, you know, better than the TN model, and I'm very satisfied with, you know, the colors on it. And I bought mine for $350, and I bought a Dell. It was a 27-inch, which was kind of what this other person was looking for, and it was a Dell U2412M. And so for $350, it's a little bit more expensive than a lot of the other things that you'll pull off the shelf at the retail store, but it's not upwards of, you know, $800 to $1,000 for some of the more, really good color monitors.
What do you use it for?
I recently built a new computer for gaming, and so, but I just want to, and you know, for movies and stuff like that. So I'm not using it for video editing or anything like that. So
right.
I didn't want to spend $800 to $1,000, and I don't know how much the Mac, whatever the Ultra, you know, thing is. I'm not really familiar with that, so I don't know how much that retails for, but I imagine it's probably somewhere around $1,000 from the other things I was looking at. And that's definitely outside of, for what I'm doing, the budget, what my budget is. And if she felt like, you know, she's doing video editing, but she doesn't have that big of a budget, this monitor that I got, I think I would recommend it because I like the colors on it a lot. I'm very happy with it.
All right. Well, it sounds like you really did your homework and your research, and we appreciate you calling in and sharing that information with us.
All right. No problem.
All right. Have a good night, Jeremy. Thanks.
You too. Take care.
Yeah, it gets really complicated. It used to be just...
Essentially, there's a pretty direct map, though, between the price and the
quality,
you know, color trueness and quality in that. And the nice part, the thing, the point on his is that there's a bunch of, like, $200 monitors that are of various sizes up to, like, 24 inches. And when you're paying that kind of deal price, you're not going to get the kind of true color and consistent color and stuff like that. But as you move up past that, they start getting better, and there are some that'll be usable that are fine, that you could find in that sort of $300 and up range.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of it comes down to also with how, you know, where your content or where the stuff that you're producing is going to end up being viewed. I mean, if you're producing stuff for the web or for the internet, chances are it's not going to make a lot of difference because it looks different on everybody's screen. But when you're talking about, at least in, for Groovehouse myself, we're talking about printing something. You know, you want it to look, you want to know what it's going to look like when you print it out. So you want to have some kind of accurate representation on your screen. I would imagine the same thing is true for video that would go to being projected in some capacity. That's one thing I've need to really, you know, I know that they make devices to calibrate monitors for printing. There's a one called Color Monkey. It's not an inexpensive piece of equipment to buy for calibrating your monitor to get true color.
So how do those, I mean, it actually physically places something on the monitor, and then what happens?
I don't know.
There's some...
What? There's a... Yeah,
it's like a color swatch. I mean, I had one of these with like an old ViewSonic monitor I've had, and maybe the technology's improved since then, but more or less you take the color swatch, and then in this case it was a piece of ViewSonic software, and you had little sliders, and more or less you held it up there, you know, in good lit room, and then you match the monitor color onto that. And they would actually apply those settings to the monitor, so whenever any color was displayed, it was kind of the true color.
The one I've seen is more modernized than that, because...
It's an actual device that
it's
you
a device. It looks sort of like a mouse.
Oh, and it reads the color coming off the screen?
You basically dangle it from the center into the middle of the screen, and then it's got a camera or whatever. And then you run the software, and it just flashes through all these different colors, and it tells each color how much it's off.
Wow.
And then it helps you to calibrate it.
That's cool. Well, that's got to be expensive, though, huh?
Yeah, like, they're hundreds of dollars. Yeah. Hundreds of dollars. But it's Color Monkey, and I think it's M-U-N-K-Y or M-U-N-K-Y.
Yeah. There's also like a spider brand or something like that that also makes one. So there's several out there.
Well, if you know somebody, I know a photographer who's offered to let me borrow his, so I'm going to borrow his.
See how it works.
I know a photographer that has one or had one. I don't know if he's
same photographer. He still has it because I haven't borrowed it yet. But he may not have it after that. But apparently it's one of those devices you can spend good money to buy, and then you don't need it again for a long time.
Does it really matter? I mean, does, I guess, true color, I know in print, like when you go into magazine, but I mean, how much does true color really, really matter? Is it really just limited to print? Like, do home users need, if someone says, I want true color, do they really need true color? Unless they're like...
For home users, if you're printing out your own stuff, for example, especially if you're doing your own printing, or if you're sending it to a pro printer, yeah, you want it. You might want it. I mean, what I've noticed in my printing of my photographs is that, you know, I let the software kind of do its thing, and you know, I go with some of the presets for white balance and for automatic contrast and stuff like that, and color balance. And when I print it out, if you take it to a good company, they'll do the color correction there. You know, they'll actually look at it, and they'll if you're blown it, they'll fix it.
Yeah, because the problem is if your screen isn't calibrated and you're doing anything by sight, you know, you'll be tweaking it. You're like, man, this picture looks awesome. The colors are awesome. And then, yeah, you go take it to print it somewhere, and all of a sudden everything's green tinted or yellow or whatever.
But historically, when I've had stuff printed out, when I've had it, you know, when I was in a photo show recently I had all my stuff. I paid the little extra tweak money that they want to do the color calibration before they print it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
was it worth it?
I don't know. I didn't have one printed without the color correction to know. Right. They all looked great to my eye.
Right.
But I think one of the things also is if you're producing stuff and you're publishing it, and I've noticed, like, I'll publish stuff to the web and then I'll look at it on my work computer, it looks totally different. Mm-hmm. The colors, it's like, you know, even exposure, if you don't have your brightness and contrast on the monitor set the same, you can really blow it. And you, I went through and I took a bunch of pictures and I thought, you know, like Flick had said, I thought, man, these look great. I'm really happy. Published, went to work to go enjoy them again. Ah, my eyes. So, I don't know. Like, the pictures are posted on Flickr right now of the pies. I don't know. They look good on my monitor. They may look like crap on yours. Your experience may vary. All right, 713-526-573. Well, we're going to have a color calibration show.
We do. We opened a box of worms.
Box of worms. Our colors. Yeah, because either we're going to be shown up by people who actually know what they're talking about. All right.
Or we're just going to make it worse.
Let's talk about color calibration on $30 inkjet. Bubble jet printers. Go.
All right, up first in the color calibration show, we're going to take Matthew.
Matthew, you're on the air.
Well, hi, guys. I've talked to you quite a few times in the past. I am a photographer, and I use Spider Pro.
Okay.
The latest edition of Spider Pro 4, the most expensive version, there are three different versions, but the most expensive version of it costs $325, and it's awesome.
That's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
But since I bought my new 55-inch color Toshiba monitor, I hooked my computer up to it, and boy, I don't need no color correction.
Really?
Yeah. I hooked it up to my computer by HDMI.
Okay.
And I get full, 1080, whatever, high resolution.
So how do you know you don't need it? Did you take it and test it and it didn't make any changes?
That's exactly right. Okay. I put my Spider on it. And
do you want to sell the Spider for cheap? Do you want to sell the Spider for cheap now that you don't need it?
No, well, I don't like to sell my stuff. You never know when I'll need it again.
Right.
But I do want to tell you what's wrong with your phone, though.
Okay. Please.
Google and Facebook was trying to tap it at the same time, and they bumped heads. Okay.
All right.
NSA only, please. Let everyone else off the line.
Good photography technology information there. Stay away from comedy. Thanks for your call tonight, Matthew. Appreciate the information.
You're welcome.
All right. Yeah, so Spider. I was going to think about $300-some-odd. The thing that always steers me away from that is that I know I'd use it one time until I got a new PC, so it would sit there. But I think, you know, having kind of a... What are you guys snickering about? You know what?
The phone line.
Oh, yeah.
We're not really snickering. We're just debating whether or not to keep turning it down.
Yeah.
And we do.
I think we should turn it down. No, I think the whole idea, you know, of having kind of co-op photography, you know, what?
Nothing.
Just get it out of your system.
He didn't realize the mics were up.
Oh.
So he turned to me and he goes, it makes a big...
All right.
Yeah.
Ferenc.
Well, you know, it's one of the reasons why, you know, I wish that I shot Canon or Nikon. So, you know, the idea of being able to borrow somebody else's, you know, lens or share lenses or walk around with somebody and kind of have like a cache of lenses.
He said he found another buddy for you.
Yeah, I heard about that.
You could have like the spider web, like the old web rings. You could just pass it around.
Yeah. So you buy a quick piece of equipment like that. At least that's not brand specific. So you can buy a spider and maybe you could rent it out to people. borrowspider.com.
There you go. Until you need it again.
Well, you can get it. You would like borrow lenses, like you'd rent it out for cheap.
There you go.
As opposed to, I wonder if you could rent it.
You could call yourself Spider-Man.
Awesome.
Wear a costume and go out and calibrate their monitors.
It's monitor calibration man. Quick, I need True Colors color calibration man.
True Colors?
But with great calibration.
Your white balance is pathetic.
With great calibration comes great photography.
Spider-Man, calibrate the furniture,
wherever he can.
Greenhouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right,
the Color Calibration Show.
In the Color Calibration Show, we're going to take Mark.
Mark, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Right. As far as color calibration, I would do a Google search, and I would put in Scott Kelby, because he's, you know, photographer, he's written many books. And it'll probably walk you through it. On the Mac, you go into your system preferences and you go into your display. But anyway, I'm digressing. I used to be a graphic artist, okay? And this guy I was working with was airbrushing some oil field tools, and he was colorblind. And he got some green paint mixed in with his airbrush. He had all these tools that he was airbrushing using Friskets and all this stuff he used to do. And his tools were green. Color calibration, wrong. And I told him, I said, these things are green, dude. And he didn't believe me because he was colorblind and I teased him a lot.
Oh, so you lacked credibility with the colorblind man.
And anyway, he had all these great looking tools. And I think it was Dresser Atlas, one of those tool companies. And he brought them all down there, and I kept telling him, dude, these things are green. And he just did not believe me. And he had all these great boards and stuff, and he brought them down there. And he came back, and he goes, they're green. He had to do them all over. But anyway, color calibration, you can do it. It's pretty easy. You can buy those fancy things. And they'll probably do a lot better. But like I say, I've never been able to get my MacBook to calibrate correctly. I do it by my eye, and it works pretty good when I print them out. I usually just print TIFF files out or JPEG.
Yeah, I mean, when I first got my Mac, I went through the onboard color calibration,
right.
The color sync. And, there's YouTube videos that tell you how to do it.
Right.
Even when I bought my brand new TV, it had a whole color calibration thing that you go through.
Right.
Because not only there's not really, for watching television or working on your own personal computers, there's a kind of a cross between true color or, you know, a compromise between true color,
right,
and what makes looking at that screen enjoyable. So if you tweak it so much to where,
right,
it's true, it may not be a pleasant experience for you.
Right, and then you want it to look correct on the output device more than anything else if you're a photographer.
Right.
So, anyway, I'll just leave the color calibration call and go home. Bye.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. All right. Wow. Color calibration. It's Calibration Man!
So there's a lesson here. If your buddy in the art world is colorblind, you need to joke constantly about it so that the one time when you're telling him the truth, he won't believe you.
It was the boy who cried green.
And two, probably don't let him drive. I'm just guessing. Red and green, I guess they go top and bottom.
Actually, yeah, they go by location.
There is, whether it's up, vertical
up and down or
horizontal,
left and right,
there is a specific pattern they're supposed to follow. However, every once in a while, they hang them wrong, and usually a colorblind person figures it out.
Ooh.
Up is down. All right. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right. Up next, we are going to take Tim.
Tim, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey. So, I got a new computer. You know, I got a laptop, and it comes totally empty as far as software. It comes just with Windows and Windows Explorer 2. And so, and it comes with a free software, antivirus software by Microsoft. I don't remember the name, but it's the only free product that they provide for virus.
Windows protection. Security Essentials, or Microsoft Security Essentials.
Exactly, that's the one, precisely. And so, I wanted to ask you your opinion about that. Do you think that you should buy some of those commercial products, or probably that's enough? What's your advice there?
My advice is that it really depends on how susceptible you as a computer user are to viruses. If you're someone who gets your computer infected all the time, then you want to protect it as much as you can. Microsoft Security Essentials is a good program, and it meets most needs, but you may want to consider a free antivirus program like AVG or Kaspersky or one of the other free ones, just to have, you know, running. They're lightweight, small footprint, and add a level of security.
What was that, AVG, and what was the other one?
What's Kaspersky? Is that the other one that's okay. free? Yeah. But AVG is fine. AVG does a good job. I run it on all my Windows computers. And the other thing about the whole thing about viruses and spyware and like that is really your best defense is being careful what you click on when you're on the web, and also just keeping a backup of your important files in the event that you need to reload your system.
Okay. And the other question, if you can help me, you know, the computer doesn't have any software, you know, doesn't have Microsoft Office and things like that. Can you find if things are, you know, at cheaper prices in certain places?
Well, there's a free office suite called OpenOffice that you can get for the Windows computers.
Actually, even jump behind LibreOffice, like LIBRE. It's kind of replacing OpenOffice, and I think IBM just got behind it, so that's going to be the one now. For better or for worse.
Say the name again, sir?
Libra, like truth or book, LIBRE.
Okay.
Office.
Okay.
And it's free.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for your call.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Is there a way on an Android phone to listen to the live stream?
What?
Yeah, I would think if you click the link, they might have to install Google Listen.
Somebody want to be able to do it, or do you want us to test it on our Android phones?
Somebody on IRC is asking about it. They said that they were at a truck stop right now in Utah or something and thought they'd try it, but it said it couldn't play the M3U file.
Get Winamp? I don't know.
For the Android, I haven't tried it. I'm sure there's a way to do it, but I haven't tried to do it. Now we're all just going to look at our phones.
Yeah.
So while y'all are digressing.
Digressing. Thanks to your.
It's IRC's fault, really. Yeah,
it's the show. It's in a show.
So is anybody watching The Walking Dead?
I am. Barrett raised his hand in the radio.
I'm not, but spoil it all the way.
No, I don't want to spoil.
Spoil it.
No, I'm behind.
Dwight's not here.
I haven't seen Sundays.
No,
yet.
I'm behind a couple of episodes.
Neither one of y'all have seen
fault.
Sundays?
No, I have not seen Sundays.
It's the spoil one, it. Do it. One before, I want to know.
It's the one before the finale.
Hit me.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Is it good? I'm probably
really
going to check it out tonight if I can.
Yeah, it's a really good episode. Yeah, it's really nice. It was. If you read the comic book, it's in line with the comic books as far as like the style of the comic book. Yeah, it was a good episode.
I'm not sure what this media player is. It doesn't play the media, but it looks cool.
Is it not playing it?
Yeah. I am sorry for that person's pain.
There are a lot. There's a ServStream is a free Android app. It supports HTTP streaming and will play M3U. Yeah, there are a few different ones. There's an M3U player that'll do it. It's free for Android. You got a few different options, but it does look like the default player will not handle it for some reason right out of the box.
Wow.
Somebody else on IRC said there's an app you can download called TuneIn or something.
It looks like there's a handful. I mean, I would just go put M3U into the market and search on that and just see what people are rating different apps. You know, try out the free ones first.
Okay. By the time he gets it all sorted out, the show will be over, and he should just download
the
it from,
podcast.
Let it from KPFT archive. If you're unhappy waiting for me to post the podcast to geekradio.com.
Have you been getting comments?
No.
Oh. How
no.
late is it?
It's preemptive.
A couple of days. It's
what?
Preemptive.
I'm yeah. upset.
Whoa.
No, I'm joking.
You can always subscribe to the iTunes from KPFT archives. If you Google search KPFT archives, the show is up within minutes. That's where I get it from.
Right.
For our website. So if you just Google search KPFT archives, you can pull the stream, you can pull the feed from there, or even download the file from there if you want to get it like lickety split.
That's where I get it from because it's never on the website.
He's in a truck stop. I bet if he asked a trucker really nicely, he could probably go and listen to it in the cab.
Yeah. For a price.
For a favor.
Come on back and talk to Teddy Bear.
You know, I'd have Pedal bear.
I was driving through town.
I just want to listen to the hum from the phone.
It's the sugar.
We had pie. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
If you don't mind pulling your light.
Whoa. All right. Up next.
This won't be in the podcast right away.
Up next, we're going to take Chris.
Chris, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How's it going tonight?
You're hearing it. It's going
it
great.
Like y'all are having a blast.
Yeah.
I got a question about plasma TVs. I'm in the market for a new TV, and I just wanted to know what you guys think about them.
Wow. We actually all kind of know something. Well,
I like them.
Now, are you asking about plasma as opposed to, say, an LED flat screen?
Well, see, I've never owned a plasma or the LCD LED TV, so...
Okay. Well, right now, the technologies are getting really close. It's more expensive for the plasma, and they're going to weigh more, and they're going to generate more heat. But
you can brag about having truer blacks.
True or black. That's the thing.
That's the bragging point.
And you don't get juddering during some fast motion that you don't that you might see in some LED LCDs.
Right. That's the higher refresh rate that they have, right? Is that what does that?
Well, plasmas don't really exactly have a refresh rate because they're not having to redraw the screen because it's actually changing pixels in real time. So okay. it's not really to say that it's not. I mean, they do, but the way they
It doesn't paint the screen X amount of times per second. They would give you the flicker like with monitors and with things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, more like the old tube way. TVs.
Even that was a scanning kind of thing, though. These are always
yeah,
on,
if
right
you ever watched a video of a tube TV, you'd see the scan lines
yeah.
when you watch. But no, you know, it's a decision that will destroy you.
Tell me about it, man. I've been going back and forth for a while.
You know, I had a tube HDTV, and I liked it. I paid a premium for it, and, you know, it was right before the, it was as the flat screen plasmas were coming out, and they were upwards, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $8,000 to buy one. So obviously that was off the market. That was off the table for me. So when I started actually getting interested in buying a flat screen TV, which I just bought one, October of last year or so, and I bought an LCD, a backlit LCD, and I looked at it in the TV store, and I saw this thing, and I liked it. I went and read the reviews about it, and I liked all the features that it had. You can look at them all day long. It's really what it's once you don't have any other TV to compare it to, and it's the only TV you're looking at, it's going to look just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of what I was thinking. You know, I put them side by side kind of, you know, with the LCD and the plasma as far as the specs go, and I'm, you know, and it's really looking like plasma's better.
Plasma is better. I would say
the LCD TV, I noticed that the plasmas aren't as bright. But the contrast ratio, the better refresh rate, the longer life expectancy.
That's generally true. I mean, for me, I mean, that's part of the reason I bought a plasma is because I watch a lot of movies, and so I want, like, a lot of good contrast, which the thing is they haven't been spending as much time and energy working on plasma as they have on LCD LED technology, and so that's been improving a lot. So at this point, it's really like the high-end plasmas that are still better than the LED LCDs because LCD technology has gotten so much better.
I would like to have Flicky come over to my house with one of his movies that he likes on his plasma and watch it on my TV and say, look, and this is what I'm talking about. This right here, the crease line in his pants, so it would be totally black on my TV.
or
this. Pause it right there. No,
well, a lot of it's on plasma is like if you have like a really dark space right next to like if you have a dark room that's black and they open a door and there's a bright light, you will the rest of your screen will stay black on a plasma, whereas And it's gotten better, but on especially older technology with LCDs, your screen would kind of turn gray. Like the black would turn gray. You would lose that blackness because...
Because the introduction of more light.
Because
right.
that,
it's almost like the light is bleeding.
Because, well, because it's pulling the light from the edges of the TV, and so it has to go across all those pixels to get to the ones that are now lit up.
Right.
Okay.
Right, and so you lose that blackness, whereas with plasma, it's only...
Affecting the pixels that are
the
changing.
The pixels that are changing, the ones that are lighting up or lit up, and the ones that are next to it that are not lit up at all. It's not having to do any backlighting or anything.
That's like the best explanation I've ever heard of that.
That is good.
But one thing they've done with LED they do the side lights. But another thing they started doing in the last maybe 3 or 4 years is they've started using cell technology. So behind the TV, it started off, there was like maybe 10 to 12 cells. And that way they could turn them on a cell at a time. And I think, I haven't checked because I bought a TV, so I haven't looked in the last 2 or 3 years. I think they've gotten more cells now. So when you have that, they're only turning on the backlights in those areas. So you still have the rest of the screen can stay that darker color.
Okay.
The other thing is with motion, like if you watch like a lot of sports or something like that, if you get a lot of motion, a lot of times the LCD LEDs will start to get, it depends on, I don't know the terminology, because there's judder and there's a couple of other terms for variations on what happens when the picture starts to break up in certain areas due to, like, to heavy motion. And that's when you get into stuff where they start doing the like, overscanning. But then you start getting, like, where everything's smoothed out and you lose, like, the film judder that you normally see when you watch a movie, which is part of the experience. And so some people think they don't like it because it ends up feeling like you're watching somebody who had a handheld camera instead of film.
Right. Yeah, and I've seen TVs that look like that. And I was looking on the internet. They call it the evening
like
news effect.
True Motion. I think it's True Motion is one of the companies, maybe Samsung or somebody calls it True Motion.
Yeah.
another thing to consider that can matter is that plasmas don't handle lighted rooms as well.
Uh-huh.
So in a plasma, you really want to be watching it in a darkened room just because it can't handle a bright room as well. To see the full color and the quality of the picture, you really want to be in a darker room, whereas LED LCD can handle rooms with, you know, windows during the day a lot better.
So if you had, like, uncontrolled light, then you would seriously want to consider that.
I think that would be a consideration. Like, you know, I have it in a room. Usually I only watch stuff in the evenings anyway. But the room I have it in, I have blinds over all the windows, so I can make it pretty dark in there all the time.
Okay. Yeah. So an overview here. What do you guys think? What would you pick?
Well, I only watch slow paced movies filmed entirely at night, so I went the LED.
I mean, you know, I went plasma.
I think basically it's like a computer.
What's that?
It's like a computer. Pick your budget and then find the best picture that you see in that range. And one of the things that happens with the TV set is when you start watching it, it's going to look a little different because it's new and you're not used to it. Then once you do get used to it, however it is, you're going to get used to what that picture is.
Right.
And I'll tell you, with my Sony flat screen tube HD TV, as long as I had it, I thought it looked fine, you know. But now with my new TV, if I go back and look at the old TV, it looks like total crap.
Yeah.
So once you get in front of a TV that's light years ahead of whatever you're used to, you're going to enjoy it. And it will drive you crazy. I mean, I probably would have chosen plasma, but I wanted to get a little bit more features and real estate for my money. So the price that I paid to get a 240 hertz, you know, HDTV, I mean, this is pretty much state of the art LCD technology, was gonna, you know, for everything that I was getting in terms of all the function, the smart TV functions, the size, the fact that it's super lightweight and sits on a pedestal, you know, all of that just compelled me to go that route. I could have spent probably another $1,000 to get an equivalent plasma TV, maybe probably $800 to $1,000 to get an equivalent plasma, if not more. with all the features and all the same size and everything. So there's definitely a cost break.
The plasma prices have changed, because when I bought my plasma, I could actually get the size plasma I was getting was actually cheaper than the equivalent LCD LED.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Right, and what I was looking at, the two brands that seem pretty good are Panasonic and Samsung.
For plasmas?
For plasmas.
Yeah. Panasonic, as far as high-end plasmas, Panasonic's, I think, got the number one plasma that was from like 12 years ago that's still never been beat in all the
tests. And see, one I was looking at, I'm not sure how fast plasma technology is going, but the TV that I'm looking at buying actually released in March of 2011.
Well, I have a Samsung, and I think it's 3 years old now.
Yeah.
So, and I've been very satisfied with it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I don't have a lot of TVs that I watch to compare it to.
One thing I will say too, that when I first got my TV, it was kind of difficult to watch. I mean, the picture was so good, and it was unsettling, and the TV was so much larger
that you started crying, so you couldn't. It was so beautiful that you couldn't watch it through the tears.
It was actually ruining my TV watching experience, because it was. It really highlighted how the camera was, the angles were, and the way that they would move through the shot. So it really felt like you were looking at a video, or like looking at...
out a window?
Kind of out of a window, but kind of not. Kind of, you could almost tell, sets of TV shows started to look like a studio.
Where you stop watching the movie and just start staring at the picture.
Well, it was affecting my suspension of disbelief, you know. So I was like, okay, well, that's an actor and that's a prop.
That's definitely, if you start watching stuff in HD, where you're getting a much higher quality, a lot of TV shows have relied on the fact that in the past you lost some clarity, you know, and so when they made props in the back, you didn't have to be meticulous about it. And so now all of a sudden in HD.
Yeah.
These props look fake. The
and
walls
also
look
the TV
fake.
Seemed too large for the room. I first thought I'd bought too big a TV, but once you get used to it, and it's actually the perfect size. It actually works out. I thought it would be the perfect size, and then I got it home, and I was like, oh my God, look at this. This is like overwhelming. And then you have to kind of adjust, and you do kind of adjust to your television. So whatever you get, now, like I said, when you get it into a room where you don't have 20 other televisions to compare it to, and you're like chewing your fingernails trying to make your decision. But yeah. I would say that if you're interested in probably the best quality image you can get, the plasma is going to probably be the way to go still.
Yeah. And that's what I was thinking, man. And you guys just definitely helped me out and that pushed me in that direction, because that's kind of what I had an idea on it. But, you know, all my buddies that, you know, plasma's got a bad rap, and all my buddies are like, oh, plasma sucks, don't do it, you're gonna, you
you'll
know,
get, you'll get
go,
burn
oh,
in.
The screen's gonna burn.
Yeah, you'll get burn
you know,
in.
All
it'll,
these horrible things.
What it, it'll, the color will go away in three or four years. I mean, in original plasmas did have those issues, but that's stuff that's pretty much been taken care of. I mean, the lifetime of plasmas are good now. Burn in is, I mean, you still will see shadowing. Like if I leave up a DVD like intro screen that's got, you know, play, pause, whatever, or if I'm listening to music and it's got a static screen, and then I change it to something else, you know, I will see like ghosting, but it's not burn-in. It's not permanent. It just is there for, you know, 10 or 15 seconds until the screen refreshes it with other stuff, and then it goes away. Yeah.
All right. Well, great, guys. Man, I appreciate it. Good, solid information.
All right. Good luck. Let us know what you get.
All right.
Let us know when
guys,
the football party's over.
Have fun with the rest of your show there.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
All right. So we got about 12 minutes left in the show, give or take an outro.
Feel bad. We never really got into the whole color calibration issue between plasmas.
Well, I was going to say, when I first turn my TV on, it takes you through a color calibration.
See, and that's something that's changed, because they didn't used to do that, and like basically the high-end people that came in were like, yeah, we'll bring it in, we'll install it, we'll color calibrate it, we'll do all this stuff, because it was like hidden menu stuff And some companies have gotten good about allowing end users easy color calibration access, and some of them still
this one just
don't
it's
really
kind of like
it.
A it's like a walkthrough tutorial. They throw a picture up and they say, okay, well, adjust this slider until you see, you know, so many boxes, and you know, until you can just barely see the edge of that one, and it takes you all the way through it. And then you go, wow, wonder if they did that right. It looks awesome. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. And then they have all these different settings you can change. You can change it, like if you're watching sports, they have a sports setting.
Sports mode, cinema mode.
Sports mode, cinema mode, you know,
realism.
More TV than I'll ever understand.
We have non-TV questions, it looks like, on hold.
What?
Yeah, and no calibration corollaries either, it looks like.
What's happened to this show?
Maybe we shouldn't take them. I don't know.
Easy. They'll hang up. Don't say that.
All right.
If you're on hold, hang tight. We're going to be right with you.
Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up?
All right. Up next, we are going to take Bill.
Bill, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Let's see here. I was going to ask another question, but now I want to ask a TV question, but I need to ask my regular question.
Start with the regular question.
The regular question is, let's see.
SATA controller.
Yeah, I have a Seagate drive that was acting up. I had an ACOM data Samba enclosure hooked up with USB 3, and I was moving like 2 terabytes of data back to an internal drive, and then about 2/3 of the way through, it would eject and just stop. It did that like 3 times. I called Seagate. They said, we don't support internal drives that are in enclosures.
Didn't you call with this one before?
Maybe I did.
You did.
Still working. I got a new chapter, though.
A new chapter.
Yeah.
All right.
I've narrowed it down to like the Marvell controllers on the motherboard. And I'm wondering, can a Marvell controller... not the Marvell controller, but can a when the BIOS starts up, it doesn't detect any drives. I've got 6 internal drives, and C-Tools for Windows. Did I go through all that?
I don't recall what all you went through, but I remember that you were trying to run a SATA drive in an external.
Yeah.
Case, and that you were having problems with it, and that you called Seagate, and Seagate said that their drive was not designed to be used in that way. And we said that once the manufacturer told you that, we didn't have a fix for it. You know, we were going to side with the manufacturer, the vendor on that, and say that if they tell you it's not designed to work that way, then it's not designed to work that way. That's what I remember.
Okay. Well, I put it internal, and I ran C-Tools for Windows on it, and it misclassified the drive as like a SAS/SCSI drive, and I narrowed it down to the 2 Marvell controllers. Apparently, some kind of weird thing going on where it does that. I called ASUS, who made the motherboard, and one of the techs said, change the settings on the Marvell controllers from AHCI to IDE, and I did that, and all of a sudden it recognized the drives properly and showed what they were correctly. But I googled ADE versus AHCI, and SATA is supposed to run on AHCI. So anyway, another thing that happened, C-Tools for DOS, when I ran that, it wouldn't recognize any of my drives. C-Tools for Windows.
What is C-Tools? I'm not familiar with this C-Tools. Is it C programming or
Seagate.
Okay.
So one of the tools will run in Windows and one will run in DOS.
Okay.
The one in Windows shows my drives and the BIOS seems to see the drives, except when the BIOS starts up, it'll flash and tell you how many drives.
I'm going to stop you right now and let you know that I do not have an answer for your problem.
Okay.
All right. I don't have an answer for this. My eyes are glazing over just listening to you describe this, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, it's not just the sugar.
I may be crashing from the sugar high on the pie, but I mean, it's not. At no point during this explanation has anything in my brain said, oh, yeah, I know the answer to this. So yeah, I'm at a loss as to tell you what to do on this. You're trying to run six SATA drives inside of one computer.
Yeah.
And I take it this is a homegrown solution, something you built yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are so many variables in a homegrown like this where you're building your own PC and you're trying to diagnose compatibility issues with your various hardware components. Certainly six drives is like, you know,
you're pushing the envelope there.
Yeah, you're on the edge, and I don't think I can pull you back in from there.
Okay.
I mean, I wish I could. I wish I could say, you know, but it might be a benefit to you to get on some hardware discussion boards or get hooked up with some other, you know, do-it-yourselfers kind of people, maybe at one of the HAL-PC SIGs or something, and get to talking to somebody about that. But there's just not going to be a quick answer. Unfortunately, we're running out of time here tonight, so I'm going to have to let you go.
Okay, guys. Thanks a lot anyway.
All right. Thanks for your call.
That guy in Utah downloaded TuneIn, and so he's able to listen now.
Nice. Listen
for
to
last,
this.
Like 10 minutes of the show, I guess.
Greetings, Utah.
Is he
and he evidently is a trucker.
Oh, he is the trucker. Sorry about the trucker comment. Oh, you didn't hear that. That's fine.
Come on back and talk to Ted.
Could have gotten your own truck.
Maybe he did.
Maybe he did, and that driver's did. Like, no, don't make me listen to technology, boy.
I'm driving to Houston right now. Do we have time for the very last call? Or
I think so. Let's take it.
All right. Go for it, Jay. It's Tom.
Tom, you're on the air with Technology Bites. Real quick, we're out of time.
Real quick. I got to buy a router, and should I buy the Netgear, the new Netgear 4500, or the Linksys?
The E4200 version 2.
Yeah, that one or the Netgear.
I've heard so much good about the Linksys E42.
Although Peter generally likes Netgear, right?
I'm a big Netgear guy at work.
But the Linksys one is the one
I
that
I like D-Link better.
Well, Dwight tested that Linksys, and I have that Linksys as well. And I don't have the version 2, but I get such good throughput on all my wireless devices. It's just awesome.
Has anybody over there checked out this Netgear one?
I haven't used that model yet. I've got a lot. I used to run almost all Netgear stuff at home. I like Netgear stuff. You probably can't go wrong, but the Linksys stuff seems lately to be a little bit more hackable. And I've got
in a good way.
In a good way. Like you can do stuff with it if you want to.
Gotcha. Alrighty, well, I hear the march off music, so I better march off.
All right, off with you.
Thanks.
Thanks for your call. All right. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't get to, you know, test out all the routers and everyday use, but I tell you, since I hooked up that Linksys, I'm streaming Netflix to my big fat TV, and it's working great, and I was using my MacBook Pro as a video streaming server wirelessly. And it was working because my MacBook had to talk to the router across the house and then come back to the TV. So
tears of joy, tears of joy,
tears of joy, tears of joy. All right. Well, thanks for joining us for Pi Day. It's going to be all vegan pie coming up your way next if you're listening here locally in Houston.
Vegan pie tastes better, I hear.
Vegan pie, vegan pie. All right. Well. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
the Pie Guy.
Bye bye.
He who lives in harmony with himself lives in harmony with the world. Marcus Aurelius. Please join us at wordsofpeaceglobal.org for a wonderful evening of self-discovery. On Friday, March 16th at 7:30 p.m., a special guest, Charanon, will speak and show a special DVD presentation of Prem Rawat, also known as Maraji, speaking at Harvard University. Charanon has been helping Prem Rawat spread his message of peace for more than 40 years. That's Friday, March 16th at 7:30 p.m. at the Little Art Gallery on the campus of University of St. Thomas, 3907 Yoakum, Houston, Texas, 77006. That's two blocks south of Alabama and one block west of Montrose Boulevard. Street parking available, or you can park in Lot S on Bernard Street. It's not the world that needs peace. It is people. You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT, Houston, Radio for Peace. Do you want to listen to KPFT's Democracy Now! But have to drive the kids to school with the radio stuck on Radio Disney? Do you need to go to the gym on Saturdays because everything's falling apart, but you hate to miss Spare Change with Larry Winters? KPFT has got you covered. If you own an iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch, you could download the new KPFT radio app directly from the Apple App Store. Just open iTunes and search for KPFT in the App Store. Not only will you be able to listen to our award-winning 100,000-watt FM broadcast, you'll also connect to all of our three HD radio stations, including KTRU. And it gets even better. Now that you've hooked up, you can use the app's tip jar and give something back to your favorite station. Listen to KPFT all you want. This is KPFT, Houston.